Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hello, dear listener. Welcome back to Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast, and a brand new year. I had to take a short break last week because I've been just so unwell over Christmas, but I'm back in action now and I'm raring to go. For this episode, I'm doing a little cross-pollination. So a good friend of mine called Aislinn Keenan, who is an Irish journalist like myself, has her own very successful podcast that focuses solely on sex and relationships, and it's called Private Education. I'll put the link in the podcast description for this particular episode, and I really recommend giving the whole series a listen. It's amazing. So a while ago, we recorded an episode together that we're both sharing on our channels as it's relevant to both of our audiences. And for this one, Aislinn is interviewing me. So topic-wise, something I'm asked about again and again is how to handle anxiety in relationships. And Aislinn was getting the same kinds of questions. So we're talking about how to be supportive to someone who's experiencing anxiety and how to cope when you're the person in the relationship who's struggling. We also talk about addressing anxiety at the very early days of, you know, dating and getting to know someone, whether or not you should say it or how to approach it. And we tackle a lot of commonly asked questions around this general theme. I've definitely touched on it before with an episode I recorded with Barry, my husband, but it's such an important topic. I feel it's worth exploring in a little bit greater detail, and I really think that you'll get some key takeaways from this. Thank you so much, as always, to my Patreon subscribers who are still with me. If you're finding the series helpful and you would like to support, please join me on patreon.com/Caroline Foran for as little as $1 to $5 a month to help keep the podcast going. And for anyone listening in Germany, Russia, or France, I just want to remind you that the books now exist in those countries, in those languages, for Owning It and the Confidence Kit. So be sure to check them out on Amazon or wherever you buy your books in those countries. Enjoy this episode, and I will be back in your ears first thing next Monday.
This time round, we're going to talk about something that you have, not that you've more experience with, but that you are, I suppose, more comfortable talking about, which is the issue of... So Caroline, for anyone who doesn't know, is the author of two books, third one in the works, and they're focused around, your first one was very much focused around anxiety, the second one was more about kind of fear of failure and imposter syndrome and that kind of thing, but on that general topic. And this time we're going to talk about kind of what to do, what not to do when your partner struggles with anxiety or depression in terms of your relationship, or vice versa then, if you're the one struggling, how you can advise your partner who might not fully understand what you're going through as to how you need to exist in the framework of your relationship. Mm-hmm. So I know you've talked about this before, but I've had so much contact from people who are either one or the other, either they're struggling with anxiety and depression and they don't know how to advise their partner, like their partner doesn't really get it, or they don't understand their moods, or they don't understand their needs or their requirements. And or on the flip side, then they've gotten on to me to say, look, my partner is really struggling mm-hmm. with anxiety, depression, mental health issues, and I don't know what to to advise them. So we're just going to kind of talk
about that. I've had the same. I mean, so many questions about like exactly what you said there. It's like not just, oh, I'm suffering with anxiety. How do I cope? How do I explain it to not just even my partner, but my family or anyone in your life at all who you have a relationship with and vice versa. It's such a tough one.
And for people who, because, you know, for someone who's suffering with anxiety but has a partner who also might have experience in that area, it might be easier because they can at least go, well, I know what it feels like to have a panic attack, for instance, or I know what it feels like to not want to leave the house, or I know what it feels. Whereas if you're in a relationship with someone who has never had a kind of a mental health struggle really to speak of, how do you start? How did you personally, I suppose, start going about explaining to your partner your specific requirements around your anxiety?
It was definitely something I didn't realize we had done or learned until, you know, after a long time. So at first I was very lucky because well, first of all, Barry had never experienced any kind of anxiety in his life. He, like, very, very straight and narrow guy.
This, you know, your husband.
My husband Barry. And when I started to feel anxiety in, it was 2014, and I mean, I majorly fell off a cliff, like, with anxiety. It wasn't just, I went from being a very confident person, you know, we were having a great time, going on dates, going away, we just moved in together. And then I suddenly got very, very unwell, to the point that I was, like, just living my life from one panic attack to the next, and I wasn't able to leave my house, and I cried all day, every day. I didn't want to be here anymore. I needed to be taken care of, like, all the time. I needed to have someone monitoring me, and thought I would end up in hospital and everything, and was just so scared of, you know, why has this happened to me? I don't understand it. I don't know how to pull myself out of this. And he was in the dark as much as I was in the dark. But I was really lucky in the sense that even though we weren't even together all that long, and so first of all, I felt this massive pressure of, like, go, you know, save yourself, be free. I felt so, like, such an unbelievable burden that, like, this is really shit for me to deal with. But the last thing I need is to be worrying about him and worrying about how this would affect our relationship, because I was already worrying about my family because they were worrying about me. And suddenly it snowballs into this massive anxiety about all these other anxieties. So the relationship one was a big driver of the anxiety that I was already feeling. And he would say to me, like, don't be ridiculous. Like, I love you. I'm here with you. And he would always say, we are going to figure this out. We are going to find a way through this. Not, you'll be okay. And when he said that enough times, I started to believe that he wasn't just my boyfriend. He was my partner. And even though he wasn't the one having panic attacks, he was going to make as much effort as I was to get me back to a point of feeling like myself again.
So he was using the word we.
We. And that was an unbelievable game changer.
That's a massive thing, yeah.
It's massive. Because... And he's still to this day, like, you know, if anything is wrong with me, he says, like, we. And it just took a weight off my shoulders. And it really wasn't until, like, then that I fully knew how unbelievable a person he was. And I think fell in love with him all over again and was like, please don't leave me, mostly because I have such bad anxiety. No one else will ever go near me. So at first it was a learning curve, and I would come home from wherever I was when I eventually did go back working and say, oh, like, I had a really bad panic attack today, or like, I can't cope. And he'd be like, oh God, like, are you okay? And this was not a good idea.
Now, okay.
Because if I was saying it to him and then he was reacting as if it was such a big, terrible thing, I would react even more, being like, oh God.
Okay, so it would spiral.
No.
Yeah,
so
okay.
The first thing we learned was the importance of normalizing it.
Okay.
So... well, actually, you know, even before that, understanding what anxiety is and how it happens, regardless of whether you feel it or not, you can wrap your head around it. And that is what I made the focus of my book and my podcast so much about, is like understanding how your brain works, why it works, how normal anxiety is for everyone, how stress can turn into anxiety, because sometimes you feel like it's come at you out of the blue and it hasn't, or you're looking for some big, ugly, traumatic moment in life to have justified why it's happened and you can't find it and you think you're gone crazy. So it's understanding everything from the hormones to, you know, the parts of your body and your brain that are relevant to anxiety.
So the actual, like, the mechanics of
the mechanics of anxiety. Yeah, yeah. That education piece around it is so unbelievably important for you as a person with anxiety, and also for anyone else in your life who thinks that you're just in a funny mood or that you can just have a chat and snap out of it. Mm-hmm. It's not a mood you're in. It's a very complex play of hormones that you can't snap out of. It's, you have this, I mean, we could talk about it at length, but there's so much going on in terms of, like, excess cortisol. And if you have excess cortisol, you're not sleeping, so you're not getting melatonin. If you're not sleeping, that in itself is a huge, huge driver of mental health issues.
Yeah.
So first of all, for Barry, because he was quite proactive like me, and he would research different things when he was in work, trying to understand, you know, because like I've said before, I'm a massive problem solver, and I wanted so badly to kind of figure this out.
Yeah.
And nothing beats knowledge, like the power, the empowering nature of knowledge and informing yourself.
Yeah.
And that's really what got me out of the hole. But for him, it was for him to understand how it works was just as important as for me to understand.
Mm-hmm.
So that whenever I felt really bad again, he could say, Caroline, I know from looking at past experience, you're in a phase of anxiety right now where you're producing so much cortisol and you're not seeing the wood from the trees. And you feel right now in this moment that you're always going to feel this way. But I know in a few days it's going to settle down for you and then you'll
mm-hmm.
feel okay.
Mm-hmm.
So he was able to spot patterns and observe things for me that when I was in the thick of it, I wouldn't be able to see. And
yeah.
when I was having irrational moments or when I was catastrophizing, he would be my, I guess he would be kind of like my real life prefrontal cortex, which is the part of your brain that you want in charge, is the part that regulates fear and anxiety. And when we're anxious, that part of our brain is just not engaged, it's switched off. So have someone in your life who can be that person for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was very lucky in that Barry is very proactive. And then after that, that kind of education piece, it was really about normalizing it. So the worst thing you could do when you have anxiety is not tell anyone. For me anyway, I'm a pressure cooker. If I'm having a bad day or having any kind of, you know, not nice feeling, if
yeah.
I don't tell someone, it's going to explode inside me.
Yeah.
So I said to Barry, look, I have to be able to say to you, I'm feeling a bit off today, I'm feeling a bit anxious today, and that you're not going to look at me like I have two heads.
Yeah.
Or you're not going to look at me as if you can't relate to me. And it doesn't matter if you've never had anxiety. I needed him, and he kind of came to this conclusion himself, to say like, so I come home from work or whatever and I'm like, oh, I didn't have a great day, I felt really anxious. And he's like, okay, like that's fine, you know, maybe there was different things at play, like maybe you weren't feeling well yesterday, so you could have been a bit compromised, or you know, you've had a lot going on. And he would help me identify those vulnerability factors, which all can contribute to anxiety when I couldn't see them.
Okay.
And then he would say, and this is another crucial thing, like, okay, we can't really help that you're feeling this way right now, or we can't avoid that it happened. But what's the one thing we can do right now in this moment to make yourself feel a little bit better? And in doing that, I was able to say, okay, I'm addressing the anxiety. I'm not pretending it's not there. I'm putting it out there and getting it off my chest. It's okay that I feel it. I can't necessarily make it go away, but I can normalize it. And I can then say, right, now that I've addressed it, I can divert my attention and maybe we can watch something shitty on Netflix. And it's not that I'm trying so hard to be like, oh, don't feel anxious, don't feel anxious. I'm saying out loud, yeah, I do feel it, but I can still do this thing.
Mm. Was it important to bring it into the present? Like that sounds like the kind of what that was in a way.
Yeah.
Like, and obviously I'm no expert on this, but like it sounds like what you're trying to do is just live in the moment and not worry about what was earlier on or what might be later.
Exactly. And he would help me do that all the time, you know, by saying, look, because if I, even to this day, if I go into a wave of anxiety where, again, you've produced too much cortisol, your prefrontal cortex is not, it does not have your back, and suddenly you're looking at life through an anxiety lens, and you're obviously, you look forward and you think, oh God, I'm not gonna be able to do that. So like, I remember it was during the summer, I felt it again, and I hadn't felt it in so long, and I had an upcoming trip to London for a few different work things, and I was saying to him, like, I don't think I'm gonna be able to cope over there. And he's like, that is like 3 weeks away. And he would try and like literally hone me into the here and now. He's like, Caroline, you know, he's like, I know you can't see it right now. I know that your anxiety is feeding you a narrative that you're believing, but it's not true.
Mm-hmm.
And I know from past experience that in a couple of days, if you just sort of accept it, let it happen, do what you know that you need to do, such as cutting out caffeine, cutting out sugar, pulling back from, you know, work commitments if it's too much and I need mm-hmm. to take a step back.
Yeah.
If you do that, in a while, the fog of anxiety will lift and you won't be as scared about London anymore. And so he's constantly bringing me back, catching my runaway mind and bringing it back. And I know I'm really fortunate that I have someone who's that emotionally intelligent
yeah.
to be able to kind of be there as that support for me. I know how hard it is. And I also know how hard it can be on someone when they have to look after their own mental health as well.
Yeah.
And that kind of brings us to, what if you're the person
the
who doesn't have
around.
Anxiety?
Yeah, the other way around, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think in educating, whether you're the person with it or without it, in educating yourself on what it is and how easy it can happen and how normal it is, and not to actually think, oh my God, what the hell is wrong with me, but think, okay, this actually makes sense,
mm-hmm.
then everyone can prevent themselves or keep themselves away from that point of falling off the cliff like I did.
Mm.
Like the only reason I got so bad was because I didn't have a clue what was going on.
Yeah.
And no one else around me did.
Yeah.
And if we have more information and more awareness and we give ourselves a bit more compassion and a bit of a break, like, I'll never get to that point again, because even though I still feel anxiety sometimes, and he says this to me too, it's like, you're not going to go back there because you know so much and you have so many skills now at your disposal. And that support is just, when you can't be supported for yourself, because when you have anxiety and you have a flare up, you're your own worst enemy. You're so hard on yourself. Having someone in your life who'll take over the reins is just everything.
So valuable.
You know, it's so valuable. And it doesn't have to be a boyfriend or a husband. It can be a parent. It can be someone, but the person who it is has to be willing to, like, understand what's going on, understand that it's not a mood, and like, it doesn't take long. Like, I explain it very, very straightforwardly and simply in the book, and actually when they do that, they realize, oh, I kind of felt like that. And we're never able to identify anxiety until we know what it is. So then actually, in knowing that, it makes Barry better able to cope when he starts to feel so like, there's been times now where he's come home and he's like, oh, like, I'm just feeling a bit like tight in my chest. And before, I would have been like, oh God, like, are you having a heart attack or something? Yeah. Whereas now I'm like, how many coffees did you have today?
Yeah.
What have you got going on? Have you got a deadline coming up? Okay. Are you putting yourself under a huge amount of pressure? So it's kind of a two-way street of support then. Because he knows, like, I understand it now, so I can help him. And I know he understands it, so he can help me.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have to have gone through horrific anxiety to be there for me.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I was listening to you so intently, I forgot that I should ask a question. I was just like, I'm like, oh, I have to drive this thing. What you're saying is just so interesting. It makes so much sense. I would love to know, sometimes I feel this way that, not that I'm the weaker person in the relationship, but I feel like...
I definitely feel that way.
Yeah, like, I feel like my husband is very mentally strong, right? And I haven't been faced yet with a challenge where my partner is the one that's struggling, you know, with their mental health. So sometimes I have the anxiety that what might happen is...
How will you cope?
How will I, the weak one, help someone who's meant to be my minder? Like, I feel like I'm in a relationship where if something catastrophic happens, my husband will be the person who makes it all better and helps me and advises me. And, you know, in fairness, my husband is in a way like Barry, like, he's very good at, you know, bringing you back down to earth and minding you and just making you feel like everything's going to be okay. And sometimes I wonder what would happen. And I'm sure there's lots of people listening who feel this way, that they're, partner is their support system. And what would happen if you had to be the support system and you're the one also struggling with anxiety and depression, or you're the one that's used to relying on support from someone and then they feel, because for me, a lot of any time I've ever had sort of issues around anxiety, it's all about security and feeling like there's a solid foundation under my, just underlying my whole general life. And a lot of that is built into your, now it's built into family, friends, your job, there's so many parts to it. But my relationship with my husband is one of the things that makes me feel like I'm on solid footing.
Me too.
And so sometimes I think, if that was to be compromised, how would I cope with that? So do you have any advice for anyone who might be in that situation where they're not necessarily the typically strong one? And I'm doing bunny ears, like, quote marks, like, how, say for instance, Barry came home and was like, I had a panic attack today.
I think being anxious in nature, you think that you won't be able to cope, but you actually have so much experience in dealing with it from yourself.
Okay.
And we still think that having gone through it, it means comparatively that we're weaker. But because we've been there, it's actually strength, because you've actually pulled yourself through, and you definitely don't give yourself enough credit for how strong you are. Like, for me to have felt like the weakest person in the world, to then pick myself up and say, I don't know how I'm going to do this, but I'm going to pull myself through. Like, that strength that I don't even know that Barry's had to confront with himself yet. So even though he feels, it's easy to be strong when nothing's going wrong.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to feel peace in on a beautiful day. It's a lot harder to feel that peace in the middle of a shitstorm.
Yeah.
And having come from the shitstorm, even though it's terrifying, you're completely underestimating how much of a support you can actually be. And I do feel it sometimes where I feel like, oh God, like, how could I support him? But there has been situations where Barry has come home and felt overwhelmed, or like, he'll worry about things that I'm going to worry about things that are so larger than life. Like, what if, you know, my career just goes to shit? And he's like, what if we forget our passports on the way to the airport? I'm like, we fucking won't. Like, why are you? So you kind of, you kind of fill gaps for each other, I think, where like Barry worries about such stuff like that I don't need to worry about it.
Yeah.
And I worry about things that he's like, as she worries about that. So you kind of complement each other in that way. But I definitely have noticed that I'm, even though I feel I wouldn't like to be the situation where he's the one needing more support from me, but there definitely has been times where he's been unsure. He's needed me to, again, be the prefrontal cortex for him and help him see the wood from the trees and lay out the facts. And again, it comes back to that education thing and understanding it and you being able to step back and say, okay, if we look at the context of your life right now, the lifestyle factors, what you're doing, we can see why this is happening. And if you can pinpoint why something is, why you're feeling the way you are, then you're already halfway there to solving it and to getting past it. And just to know, this makes complete sense. This is why you're feeling this way. I can't make it go away right now, but I can be here for you. You can talk about it whenever you want.
Yeah.
And I think as well, you just have to be really careful when you're, and I feel this a lot because I get so many messages from people listening to the podcast or who have read the book wanting to tell me their anxiety story, wanting more specific advice. And I don't have any more specific advice to give than what's in there or what we're talking about now.
Yeah.
But I feel like if I get into a dialogue with someone where they're telling me and they're like, I feel, because I'm not trained, I'm not a professional, I kind of internalize it and I feel like, oh, I need to be there for this person. And then I start to feel like I actually don't want to spend my whole day talking about how horrific anxiety is. So I have to kind of pull back, and like it's oxygen mask theory of like put yourself first. So you can't do that for everyone in your life. And some people, I think, I mean, naturally people will come to me in my friends group because I understand mental health issues. But you have to make sure that even though you love this person, if it's your partner, you are number one. And if you are sacrificing your mental health to help theirs, you're going to end up back in the position that you're in. So you need to look after yourself from sleep, from nutrition, from whatever. Like, you can only be supportive if you're looking after yourself. The same way a mother can only be a good mother if they're looking after themselves as a mother.
Yeah.
Which I would know nothing about yet, but I've heard.
What's the thing they say? You can't pour from an empty cup.
Exactly.
And like, I feel like that's really true for a lot of people. Like, you know, you couldn't possibly be supportive and be a solid foundation for someone if you're not taking care of yourself. So you do really have to put yourself first.
But to be supportive to someone doesn't mean that you have to have it all figured out or not have any quibbles or worries at all, because I think that's too much pressure to put yourself under.
Yeah.
I think you can, you know, two people who are going along their own road, experiencing different things, can support each other without having to be like, well, I'm ahead of you and I know how to do it, so come on, follow me.
Yeah.
I don't think that, I think that's too much pressure. And I think you just have to, first of all, imagining, looking forward and thinking, what if I can't support that person eventually? That's catastrophizing and that's worrying about something that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
So again, it comes back to like the coping mechanisms for anxiety in general, which involve dealing with where you are right now and confronting things as you come up to them and not projecting.
Yeah.
So.
And like, I get the feeling that like for someone who has, you know, struggled with anxiety or depression or anything like that, and then is trying to advise someone else who has it, like I found it in the past, it can come across a bit preachy or something.
Yeah.
It can come across a bit like, I know what you're going through and it will be fine. So how do you kind of navigate that? How do you give them the advice and tell them that you're there and tell them that you know what they're going through without minimizing what they're feeling?
I think you have to acknowledge that everyone's experience with something is probably a little bit different. But for me, in how I've been able to reach people like friends who've been in hard times or anyone, is to show your vulnerability yourself. And, you know, it's not saying this is what you need to do for your anxiety. It's saying this is what worked for me. This is what I didn't realize. I wish someone had told me back then. And again, like, so, you know, I have a friend at the moment who's having a hard time with depression. And I can clearly see that it's, you know, if you step back and not look at it as how you're feeling today, but looking at it as the hormones that are actually triggering all this in your brain, it's not your fault. So directing them towards resources as well, that, you know, this might be helpful. And just also with anxiety, I don't think you can come across as preachy, because someone who has anxiety so desperately wants to be helped and to find a solution, whereas I think depression is probably a little bit harder, because, and I don't have really experience of depression apart from feeling I felt depressed as a result of my anxiety. It was like a symptom of my anxiety. But it's harder with depression because maybe the person with depression doesn't necessarily want to address it or identify it. Whereas someone with anxiety typically is like, oh, like, whatever can I do to help this go away? And if you can, for me, I mean, all I ever wanted when I was really suffering was to hear from someone who was just like me, who I could relate to, who could say, I have felt like this and here I am now. you know, functioning again and not just surviving but thriving, and you'll be able to get there too. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to hear from someone who was a doctor who was quoting from a book saying, yeah, just do this thing, because I was like, do you think I'm crazy? Like, do you actually get what I'm talking about? Is it normal? Please tell me that I'm normal. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, you don't have to be perfectly well adjusted to be supportive to someone else mm-hmm. in your life.
Yeah.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
You said earlier on, and I really kind of feel this, like you said there was an element of guilt, like you wanted to just say to Barry, go on, save yourself, you don't need this. Like, I know a lot of people, a lot of friends of mine or even people who've written in that listen to the podcast who have anxiety, they have said to me that they feel like they're a burden, their anxiety is a burden on their friends and their family. Yeah. And like, I actually had one girl message me and say she feels like she doesn't want to bother her partner with the issue of her anxiety, and that's why she was asking me. She was like, look, I don't want to bother him, but I feel like our relationship is suffering because of my anxiety, because he doesn't get it and he doesn't blah blah blah. Yeah. Like, how do you not feel guilty?
It's so hard, and I think it's just such a characteristic of anxiety to feel like a burden on everyone else. And I used to always say, like, or my brother would say to me, you know, Caroline, everyone has their cross to bear. And I'm like, yeah, and I'm Barry's cross to bear.
Yeah, you don't want to feel like you're someone's cross to bear. Yeah,
And that's really hard. But again, the only reason it's so hard in their relationship is because they don't together understand what they're dealing with.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. Yeah. Like, he doesn't get it. So he's like, just don't be that way. Mm-hmm. And then she's, you know, keeping it all in and not saying it out loud. So it's getting worse and worse. That could be totally cut in half with both of them being willing. And also, I mean, I don't want to make this person feel bad, but like, look at the strength of their relationship. Like, if you have to be able, if you can't be there for someone and cope when things get shitty, for me, is the litmus test of a relationship. Yeah. They don't run scared. They're willing to say, okay, let's do, like, the we thing, let's do this together, let's figure this out together. Yeah. If he wants to be supportive, he needs to come to her and say, we'll figure this out. Come on, we will read up about it. We will research it. We'll try different things. I come with you to like a meditation class or whatever. Mm. And be willing to educate himself, because it'll benefit him too. And he'll be well equipped for his own mental health when eventually it'll bite him in the arse as well, because not one of us is safe from not ever feeling stress or anxiety in our lives.
Yeah, we're not. Nobody's exempt from that.
No, it's not like a members only club.
No. Yeah. And you know, it's certainly not a club that you would want to join.
No.
Willingly.
No. But I really empathize with that feeling, and I've been there, and it's really hard. And I've definitely felt like the weak one in my friends group, and definitely in my family, you know. But that's just looking at yourself in a very, you're focusing on the negative, which of course we do, because we all have a negativity bias. Mm-hmm. But your anxiety doesn't define you. You're not your anxiety. It's something that you're experiencing now. It's not a permanent thing. You might have waves of it throughout your life, but you have to try and think about what else there is to you, and what else your partner is with you for. They're not just with you because you're a bag of anxiety. You can't see how much more there is to you right now, but it is there.
Yeah.
And definitely don't bottle it up.
Yeah.
Because
I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with. The negativity bias, you know, and it's not just, I mean, you know, like 100 people can give you a compliment and you'll cling on to the one person yeah. that gives you the negative feedback or whatever. But I think that's something that a lot of people feel in relationships, is that they are only the bad parts of themselves.
Yeah.
And they forget that there's other things there. So did you ever find yourself having to remind yourself, okay, yes, I am Barry's cross to bear, but I also am Barry's, you know, the person who makes him laugh and yeah. the person who does this. Did you actually have to make that a focal point for
yeah,
you?
Yeah, sometimes I needed him to tell me.
Okay.
When I was feeling particularly low, and, you know, I would say things like, you know, thank you so much for like sticking through with me. And he would say again, like, to the point where he's like getting frustrated, being like, Caroline, you are not like my penance. I'm not.
Yeah.
This is not an endurance test for me. He's like, I fucking love you.
Yeah.
And then I kind of, when I'm feeling good, then I'm like, you're so lucky to have me, you know. And I focus on the parts of myself that, you know, I make him laugh every single day. He's never bored because I have so many different personalities. We have a great time. And there's no such thing as ever getting bored with each other. And you have to like let go of the need to be the perfect girlfriend or the perfect yeah, partner, because yeah. no one is ever going to be.
Yeah. And like it's something that I had a message from a girl recently who, oh, I felt so sorry for her. She said that when she has a panic attack or an anxiety attack or whatever it is that you want to call it, she said what she finds herself doing is, she said it happens to her a lot at nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
And that,
do you know why that is?
Why?
Because you're exhausted and your prefrontal cortex has switched off, and all of the worry and fear and everything is running amok, and you're not able to rationalize it because you're too tired. That is why it's worse. And why anxiety is worse in the morning is because we produce an extra dose of cortisol to wake us up and get us to face the day. But if you're already anxious, you have got enough cortisol in there, and then you're just like turbo boosting your cortisol, so you're feeling worse in the morning.
Right, I did not know that.
But again, knowing these kind of things will yeah, help that when you're in that yeah, moment, yeah, you'll be yeah, like, yeah. okay, this isn't just me, this is why. And I still, mm-hmm. I struggle with that so much, where like I wake up feeling anxious at night and I may as well just go down and make a cup of tea, because I can't rationalize because my prefrontal cortex is gone asleep.
Yeah.
That's why sleep and rest is so important, so to keep vital. That strong.
Yeah.
Sorry, but you were telling me about this girl.
Yeah, sorry. She said it happens a lot at night, and which I will direct her to that information now that I know that. But she said what happens is she finds herself, she'll sit up in bed and she'll be having an anxiety attack, and she won't have the words or the way to explain it to her partner, and she mm-hmm. said that what she ends up doing is apologizing.
Mm-hmm.
And she says that on top of the anxiety she's already having, she feels guilty because he's missing out on sleep. She feels guilty because she's crying. She feels guilty because she doesn't know what to tell him. She feels guilty because he's sitting there awake beside her, not being able to help in any mm-hmm. way. And she said that makes her feel massively, massively guilty. And what she keeps saying is, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry.
I've been there as well, and I definitely do apologize. But again, that's just the perfectionist nature coming out of her. People who are anxious are so like always perfectionist as well, and they're always very hard on themselves. So I think again, if she could wake up her partner and say, I'm feeling really anxious right now, it might take nothing more than, okay, like, that's okay. Why don't you read a book? Why don't you, you know, I'm here for you if you need me. Absolutely wake me up if you need to, but like, just try and relax. It'll pass. If that person had just those couple of sentences to say to reassure them, because if she's keeping that in and not saying it, it's bubbling over like Vesuvius inside her.
Yeah.
So it's very important to lay out those. It's like having a conversation maybe when you're completely in the light of day sober. How are we going to cope when I feel this way? Let's think of what can help mm-hmm. me, and let's think of what can help you
when you're not yeah. anxious.
When you're not yeah. anxious. So like, what will how does it affect you when I feel anxious? Do you feel like completely helpless? Okay, well then the person who's anxious needs to say to them, listen, I'm not expecting you to solve this or make mm-hmm. it go away. I just want to know that you're there, because it's a bit scary and I don't want to be on my alone right now.
Yeah.
Like when I'm anxious and Barry's there, like, he's not waving a magic wand and making it go away. He's just saying again, okay, what's the one thing right now that we can do to help just kind of calm things down a little bit? And crucially, it's okay, let the panic happen. Let it happen. It's okay. It's fine. You're safe. You're here with me. We don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to do anything. Just focus on your breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And those very simple, basic, so state the obvious things make all the difference in the world.
And the state the obvious things are sometimes the things that people forget to do in those,
exactly.
those moments.
Yeah.
Does it help you ever? I'm just trying to think of in navigating your relationship when you're having anxiety. I feel like it would be much more of a challenge in the early days of a relationship where you might not necessarily know each other that well yet.
Yeah.
You were obviously very lucky with Barry that he straight away kind of had the emotional intelligence to know what you were going through and be supportive. But maybe not everyone might be in that same position with their partners. Did you ever think, or would you imagine it would be a good idea to give a bit of a heads up about your day? As in, look, say a 3 p.m. text being like, look, I'm having a bit of a, today's a bit, been a bit of a wobbly day, when I come home later or when I see you later or when we go on this date later, I might not be necessarily in
completely
in form.
100%. Yeah. Okay. 100%. And also, even like if you're starting to see someone and you're afraid to tell them, oh, you're actually quite prone to anxiety because like you don't want to scare them off.
Yeah.
That's a really hard thing as well. But it's so common to so many of us that if you say it and you normalize it and you take the horns off it, it becomes not this whole, this thing that she has that takes over and it's going to be there when it's on our date. Mm-hmm. And more than likely they'll be like, oh yeah, like I can relate. I felt like that a bit the other day. So I think it's really important to know it, to kind of test the water at the beginning of a relationship or on a couple of dates to like, and in this day and age, I mean, bring up mental health and see how comfortable they are talking about it, because we all need to become more comfortable. And the more we all talk about it and normalize it, the less we all suffer from it. And so don't wait until you're 6 months in and then say, oh, sorry, I've been having really violent panic attacks because I'm afraid of what you think of me. Be willing to be vulnerable. Mm-hmm. If they don't fucking appreciate you, want to be with you because you're a vulnerable person, which they are too, or because you, you know, feel stressed like the rest of us do because you feel anxious, then they're not worth being with.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I know. I feel exactly the same. And that's something I always advise people, whether it's friends of mine or people who message. I always say, you know, if there's something that you are deliberately hiding from your partner or from a potential partner, like, they're gonna find out eventually.
Yeah.
And it's,
and also give them credit, because maybe they'll be so much more supportive than you think.
Yeah.
And that's not fair. I mean, give them the chance to be there for you and let them. Barry was like, please let me love you, like I'm here, stop trying to push me away, I'm here, let me love you, we're gonna figure this out, go away now. Mm-hmm. Please.
And if you're on a date or if you're seeing someone at the early stages, I mean, I feel like dropping it into conversation the same way you'd drop in, I also love horror films.
Exactly.
You know, just be like, yeah, I struggled with anxiety last year and I was on medication for a while, but I'm like doing this and doing
100%.
This.
100%. And that's normalizing
it. Yeah, just state it. State it like it's not a problem. It's not an issue. It's not something that you're, you know, you don't have to make a big announcement.
No, and the only time that you make a big announcement about it is when you're so terrified of it yourself and you don't understand it. Yeah. But now, like, I will say, feeling a bit anxious again, like had a sandwich, you know, watched this show, like I'll state it, like I'll state everything else, and he'll just be like, okay, what can we do? What do you want to go for a walk? Do you want to maybe just have a bath, maybe put some lavender oil in it? Mm. Do you want to put on some absolute shite on TV and take your mind off it? Yeah. And
whatever,
it's
works
those
for
tiny,
you.
Tiny little things. It's not like, okay, let's just stop everything and go to bloody, you know, the Himalayas and solve this. It's not, you're not looking for a knight in shining armor. Yeah. You're looking for just an ear.
Yeah. Someone, a friend of mine, I remember, I felt they were struggling, right? And I was meeting up with them and chatting to them and not trying to get it out of them. That's the wrong phrase. But I sensed that there was something going on and I wanted to help, you know, because I'm their friend and I love them. And I remember saying to her, will we go for a walk?
Mm-hmm.
Because she wasn't saying it to me when we were just sitting having coffee or sitting having a meal or in her house or whatever. And so we ended up going for this walk, and on the walk, she completely shared what she was going through with me, right? So, and I was thinking, it's mad, you know, how she's comfortable to share it with me now, but wasn't when we were at her house or, you know, when we were in private. So I think, you know, what I saw in that, what I kind of identified in that, was we weren't sitting face to face. So she didn't feel like, I'd be looking at her or judging her when I said it. She didn't have to worry about what my face would belie and tell her about what she was saying. We were doing something active. So we were out in this space and there was, you know, other things going on around us. There was other things to focus on. There was things distracting us. So it was easier for her to just slip it into conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And then as well as that, I felt as though we were in public, which is, it sounds weird, but I feel as though if we had been in private, she would have felt like she could have cried and had a complete meltdown in front of me. And I don't think she wanted that.
Mm-hmm.
I think she wanted to be in public so that she probably wasn't going to cry. She was just going to state it as fact.
Yeah.
So that little trick, I actually use that now. If ever you know, if ever there's something going on with my husband or with a family member, I'm like, will we go for a walk?
Yeah.
Do you have any other little kind of tricks that you use to kind of make things a bit easier in terms of your anxiety or somebody else's?
Like for
else's?
Me or for someone else?
For whoever.
Yeah, I think the main thing is just, I mean, I will always tell the wall, I'll tell whoever's listening, I'll normalize it till mm-hmm. the cows come home so that it's not a big scary monster.
Yeah.
Getting out in nature, going for a walk is really helpful as well.
Yeah.
That's kind of it really. I mean, it's very, like with a friend, if someone I know, if I need to reach out to them and I'll say like, how are things? I kind of feel like they're more willing to let me sort of step in and say like, are you looking after yourself? What's going on? Because they know that I know what it feels like and that I don't really care if they're going to be like, oh, go away.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, well, I don't want you to get to the point of burnout that I got to. I don't want you to fall off that cliff.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to have the awareness of what you're doing now. So yeah, it's just kind of, and also like identifying it with your friends and knowing, not waiting until, okay, not dealing with anxiety when it's hit you, but like knowing when the train is coming down the tracks and when to get off. So being very in tune with your body to know, okay, like I've had a lot going on. Does this actually suit me as a person? You know, I don't want to wait until I can't cope anymore and then be like, oh geez, I did too much. I now know, people say to me like, oh, you must be so busy and run off your feet because I have a few different things going on. No, like I take care of myself so well. I will never to the point, go to get myself to the point of burnout again. I just, nothing is worth sacrificing my mental health. I sleep like the dead.
Yeah.
I will never take on too much anymore. And I don't care because what drives me now is not goals or what looks good on my CV or like this far off end goal. What drives me is feeling as good as I can feel all the time. So if that means earning a little bit less money and like enjoying, I'm obviously very lucky that I enjoy what I do. I'm going to tailor my lifestyle to suit the fact that I am anxious and that's okay. Yeah. I'm not trying to not be an anxious person.
Yeah.
I'm accepting that I am and I'm trying to work with it rather than against it.
Yeah. I saw, you know, Andrea Horan. Andrea Horan owns Tropical Popical and she, I was at the Irish Tattler Women of the Year Awards recently and she won an award. And as part of that, she did like a kind of an interview afterwards. And one of the things she said was, and I just thought it was so brilliant. She said that she was like, I love to party, so I'm not going to open my salon on a Monday because I know that over the weekend I've partied hard and I want the Monday off.
Yeah.
She also only opens her business at 11 o'clock every day because she's terrible in the morning. She's not a great morning person.
Mm-hmm.
So she said, and the quote was something, I'm totally paraphrasing, I'll probably ruin it on a day, but she said something along the lines of, what's the point in building an empire if you're not living at the same time? Like,
exactly.
What's the point in driving yourself to burnout if you're not enjoying what's happening?
I couldn't agree more. Like, tailor your life to suit the fact that, like, give yourself the best chance of not having your anxiety rear its head and be like, oh, you're not listening to me, you're not taking me seriously.
Yeah.
And then you'll have a far better time.
Yeah.
You know, and also I think another thing that I always remind people is to know the difference between your anxiety and your personality. So they're two very different things. And sometimes I think, oh, I don't want to do this thing because I'm anxious, and I always blame anxiety as holding me back. And then I'm like, if you didn't have anxiety, would you want to do this thing?
Mm.
And if the answer is nah, I still wouldn't want it, then it's your personality talking. And if you keep denying your personality, you're going to create more anxiety. So know when it's just not you, and know the kind of person you are, and like appease that person, and know when it's anxiety that, okay, I would want to do this if I didn't feel anxious. And then that's the kind of anxiety you want to kind of face and deal with and push through.
Yeah. I think there's some people as well who, and I know you've become the unofficial spokesperson for anxiety in Ireland, but I mean, there are some people, who self-label, I'm an anxious person.
Yeah.
And when the thing that was making them anxious or the things that were making them anxious are no longer there or are no longer such a cause of anxiety, it's almost like they have to fill that void with something because they are an anxious person.
Yeah.
So I think that's really great advice. Separate anxiety from your personality and let your personality be what it is.
Yeah, like I don't know, this is quite controversial, but like I kind of recoil when I hear people say like, oh, I was diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder. Now, I know there's definitely like a medical criteria for it or whatever, but I think that people take that as a label and say, well, this is how I am now and I'm never going to be any other way, and like some sort of sentencing. And I don't describe myself that way at all. I'm a completely normal person, and sometimes I feel anxiety like the rest of us. I feel things greatly. I feel probably things a lot more than most people, and I'm prone to kind of going into that anxiety space. But I'm not every day an anxious person. Mm-hmm. I deal with it, but I think if I start to say, oh, like I have this debilitating disorder, I live my life according to that too much, and I would, I don't know, it's kind of a, it's something that you can it's temporary, you know, nothing is fixed about anxiety, and what you're feeling today might not, you know, I had about 2 or 3 years where I didn't have any panic attacks at all, and you know, I'm not going to say you're you, and sometimes you feel anxious, sometimes you feel stressed, sometimes you feel fine, mm-hmm. and I just don't think those labels and calling yourself an anxious person helps.
Doesn't have to define you.
Like, no. I don't think so.
Yeah. So just to kind of go back on to just the kind of bits of advice for someone in a relationship who's either they're dealing with anxiety or their partner is, just the word we, I know you said that's important because that, you know, if you're in a relationship with someone who's struggling with anxiety, to refer to it as we'll be fine, we're going to get through this, that's a, in itself, a support.
Huge. And for them to mean it as well, though.
For them to mean it, yeah. And that kind of, that almost normalizes it too, because it's talking about it and saying that we're going to be fine. This is something that we can do.
So the same way if your partner was sick with, like, you know, some sort of physical illness.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be like, I don't know what you're going to do about that.
Yeah.
You'd be like, well, how can I help? What can we do together?
Yeah. And then the other thing that I think is very important for people to take away is the education around it. So whether you're the one that's suffering or whether it's your partner that's suffering, get the knowledge. Go and do a bit of research. It's not going to take a long time because there's a lot of widely available, very easy to understand research done into it. So go and learn a bit about anxiety, whether that's from your books, your podcast, actually Caroline's podcast. Because I mean, I wouldn't ever like that. I wouldn't be someone who labels myself as I have anxiety or whatever. But you know, you go through stages and it comes and goes and whatever. For that's how I experienced it anyway. But I was listening to the one where Caroline has an episode where you literally just help people to breathe for ages.
Oh yeah,
and that episode, sometimes I'll just lash that on in the car. Mm. You know, and it'll just help me. It'll just bring everything back down to like a manageable level. You know, if you've a bad day at work, or if the anxiety is very much situational as opposed to kind of general.
And there's a panic attack rescue guide, like a real time panic attack rescue guide that people listen to, like they go back to it a lot because I'm just trying to, first of all, explain what's happening, but then kind of help you guide you through it a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's a mix between a resource like a, like the meditation type stuff, but also the knowledge and the experts who can explain things, and then other people like us who just share their experience of it. And then the book is like, what is anxiety? Why is it normal? Why are we feeling it? What can we do about it?
And it's my
approach to anxiety, and it's a two-part approach that I kind of coined a phrase, the assess and address approach. And that's useful for anyone with anxiety. And I use it all the time myself. So the assess is that education piece. Why is this happening? So what is anxiety in general? Why do we feel it? What's going on in our body? But then also relative to me, why am I feeling it? What's going on in my life? What are the different vulnerability factors? And then the address it is, what am I going to do about it? Mm-hmm. What are the things that I know work for me? It might be everything in the book. It might be one thing in the book. It might be nothing in the book. But you'll get something out of it.
Yeah. Deadly. Amazing. So thanks, Carol. Like, I feel like I learned so much from you. Just listening to all that, I'm like captivated. Thanks so much for giving us all that completely valuable information. For anyone who, any of the people who've messaged me and asked me questions about this particular topic, which I know is lots of you,
hopefully we've answered it for them.
Yeah, I feel like we've given some good stuff. I think like we should have advised grabbing a notepad at the start of this episode because Caroline did so much good advice. But yeah, anyone who wants to do a bit of more research or wants to give a resource to their partners, Caroline has her her first book, Owning It, and the podcast to kind of match. And it's a really good one to listen to. If you have anxiety or if you don't, it's still a good, you get to kind of experience other people's perspectives on the whole thing.
And it's not going to give you more anxiety, which I think people are afraid of.
No, it's not going to spark anxiety in you. But thank you again, Caroline. That was amazing.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.